Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is CSN's Capitals Faceoff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Capitals Faceoff podcast from CSN. I am the Capitals correspondent, making my triumphant return to the podcast.
Woohoo! As a father.
Your host, JJ
New daddy.
Regan, with me today, she is the Bonnie to my Clyde.
Whoa.
I like it.
She is the Capitals reporter, Jill Sorensen.
Bonnie to my Clyde. Mm-hmm. Very well.
Mm-hmm. And we may be Bonnie and Clyde, but he's about to steal the show. It is the one and only Joe Beninati with us today.
JJ, you did some homework on that. I like that. Let's begin, Bonnie and Clyde. I know where this is headed.
So we are very excited to have Joe be with the show to join us today to talk about what your offseason's been like and how you prepare for the season and give us a peek behind the curtain of what it is like to be the one and only Joe Beninati.
Cool. I introduced this topic to Jill out in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that my life basically is a Woody Allen movie.
I can't wait to hear the story. And he gave me nothing.
So we are just beginning August, and September gets really busy. So July is usually the month where Joe gets to play. July was more woe is Joe than Joe at play.
Oh,
it was completely woe at Joe. You know how they say bad things happen in threes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to bore you for a couple minutes.
Not boring.
This began on a good night, Emmy night.
Okay.
Ooh.
And you couldn't park your car at the facility where the Emmys were given. You had to take a shuttle bus.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, fine. The night goes well, and I'm double-fisted with awards, and I'm all happy, and I'm going to the shuttle bus. I have my tuxedo on. The shuttle bus has an armrest that's about, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 inches off of the seat. Somehow that armrest crawls into the pocket of my tuxedo pants. RIP!
No.
And I'm like... Thankfully, it was the end of the night. Extremely expensive suit, and I was really worried that it was destroyed. That's one. Bad things happen in threes. 2 days later, I'm parking my car. I have plenty of room to park my car between a light fixture and another car in a parking lot. The light fixture has a circular sort of cement brace support stanchion there. I turn the car. Oh!
Oh, the worst sound in the world.
Now, I'm upset with myself, and I'm praying maybe it's just the rim. Not the rim. The door and the rear quarter panel.
Oh.
Very, very expensive. That's two. And then the coup de grace. The coup de grace for woe is Joe. Dum Dum is in the shower. Dum Dum does not have a towel near the shower.
Mm-hmm.
Dum Dum exits the shower, goes 15 feet to get said towel, and returns back to the shower. Upon returning to the shower, Dum Dum catches the wet, soapy water that's on the floor from his first walk, wipes out, and lands flush on his left side rib cage.
Oh, my gosh.
Thankfully, not breaking any ribs, but awfully, it felt like it was. Messed up my right shoulder. I was on the IR for 3 weeks. Bad things happen in three, so I'm hoping that that's the conclusion
that's
of my
it.
Summer fun, and woe is Joe.
Well, now we're in August, so you can start afresh with a new three.
Yeah, and all I've been doing is getting ready for football in September. Oh, yeah, yeah. Craziness. But that's a true story. It happened within 5 days, and I was ready to do very great damage to myself as a result.
That's insane.
Not happy.
Wow.
Not happy.
Did you have any plans that you had to cancel because of any of that?
I missed at least two or three fundraising golf tournaments that I had to bail out on. I couldn't turn or twist or anything like that. Thankfully, things have healed nicely, and we're rounding into form, Jill. Let's just say that.
And I know you have plenty of wine that will
yes, that was
help with the healing process.
That was definitely a soothing process, yes. You're right. I do love wine. I love wine and food together. I never drink wine on my own. I would rather drink it with you and JJ.
Yeah.
And we can do that very, very soon.
How about our next podcast?
Literally. We'll just start setting them up.
I should have thought about that for this one.
That will make
for
a great
podcast. I'm not going anywhere.
Right? Yes.
I'm not going anywhere. We can do that too.
Ooh. That sounds good.
Giddy up.
So.
Save me. Somebody save me from myself.
That sounds harrowing, but I did get a paper cut today. So
really?
I'm right there with you.
Oh,
anyway.
Boy.
Paper cut.
That's tough.
Hang, Neil.
Anyway, yeah. So, Joe B., you have a legendary voice, uh-huh. and it cannot be just restricted to hockey. It has to be shared with the people in the summer and fall months. So what do you do when you're not doing hockey?
Besides ruining your car.
Besides destroying myself and all the valuable properties attached to me. too funny. Once we finish hockey, lacrosse kicks in earnest for me, usually right as hockey is ending in the regular season. So April, May, early June are spent with the college and pro lacrosse. A lot less pro lacrosse than I used to do. I used to do Major League Lacrosse on ESPN for almost a dozen years. That has gone away. But the college lacrosse action, I always enjoy, whether it be on BTN or ESPN. And then once we get around to that August time where we are now, I've been full out on Big Ten football.
Ooh.
And you get your assignments usually towards the tail end of July, early August. And I've had mine for a couple of weeks now. And as usual, and his locker will be killing me over, I've been in the room, in the office, just starting to really hammer away. And college football is an amazingly different animal than most of the other sports that I do. I've been lucky enough to do 8 different ones, but when it comes to college football, as far as the prep work and the homework that's required, it's exhausting. If you want to do it the right way, you can really, really wear yourself out, but I try to spread it out over these next 4 or 5 weeks so that I can hit the ground running. My first game's in Lincoln, Nebraska on September 2nd, and that atmosphere is phenomenal. And I was laughing the other day because my BTN assignments run right into our CSN preseason games with the Caps. So, like I said, July was the month to have fun.
Yep.
And instead, I decided to do everything but that.
What is the matchup that you're most excited about college football?
I think it's that first one. Mm-hmm. I think it's the first one. I unfortunately, with hockey being where it is and how it lies in the schedule, I can't do a lot of the Big Ten conference games. I wish I could that BTN was getting. And there's a lot of exciting things that are going on for the Big Ten conference with respect to its national television partners. But I get to wade in on a couple of weeks of non-conference. And it's going to sound like a nothing game, but I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas State does give Nebraska a little run.
Mm.
I think the Red Wolves won at least 7 of their last 8 last year, including their bowl game. It's a transition time for Nebraska. A lot of people will expect Nebraska to roll a team from the Sun Belt. That may or may not be true, but that could be the best matchup that I'm getting. And then I get to do a home game of sorts. I'm in College Park the next week. I have Maryland against Towson.
Cool.
The battle for all of Maryland.
As much as I love hockey, I love college football.
Yeah.
I could watch it all day.
I'm right there with you. You know, people always say, Joe, you had one game left to broadcast. Of course, it would be a Stanley Cup final game for me. I can't lie. I have to be true to myself in that regard. But it's awfully difficult to beat a major college football setting on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I just got the chills. Honest to goodness. I love that. I love that atmosphere.
I've been lucky enough to do games in Oklahoma, in Nebraska, at Alabama, SEC schools. Mm. And when you're surrounded by 100,000 people and the atmosphere is just so electric. It's addictive. You want to do it all the time. And for me, unfortunately, it's not my bread and butter. My bread and butter is right here in Washington with the Caps.
Mm. Now
we love that.
Thank you.
Yes. It is August, which means this is the deadest of the dead part of the hockey calendar. But before you know it, it's going to be September. Before you know it, hockey's going to be in the air.
Yeah.
So how do you prepare for a new hockey season?
Well, similar to the background work that's put in for a football season, only much more intense now in these next 4 or 5 weeks, obviously what I have to do is touch up on my Capitals stuff first and foremost. And then, JJ, I'll take a look, and Jill, I'll take a look at that first month of the season and see where Washington is going to be scheduled to play and against whom. And whether or not we do a preseason game often helps. When you do a preseason Caps game on CSN, the opponent you do that much. It is akin to college football because I wind up prepping for almost 50 guys.
Right.
If the Caps are playing the Boston Bruins, you're doing a lot of Providence yep. Bruin homework.
Yep.
And that's a good thing for me to know prospects for the future. It's a good thing for me to dig in and to go to a deeper depth on the Hershey Bears. And when I hear you guys speaking with Coach Mann, it was terrific to hear him speak about the prospects who are going to be more than likely graduating to the NHL ranks. So there's most of my homework is done from a biographical standpoint. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of different sources that I can put together these charts with. I know I'm old school. I need the paperwork, but the chart work is what I spend the most time on. And then as we get closer and closer to season, it's conversations with coaches. It's conversations with players. It's conversations with scouts. Not just that are directly connected to the Caps, but others that are league-wide who can give me a more of a treetop look at the NHL and specifically the division that we're most looking at with regard to the Metro. And all of a sudden, it's there in October, and you have to be ready at it. And that's when, by that time, producers and directors, Steve Farrell and Bill Bell, have weighed in, and we start to get together with what our big picture is going to look like from a CSN telecast standpoint. If there are any new additions, whether they be new toys or new talking points or topics, those, you know, we usually get down to brass tacks a week or so before preseason begins. So it's not far away. It really isn't. When you think about us doing a preseason telecast in mid-September, those meetings that I'm referring to are going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And all, you know, college football be damned, Joe. You have to be ready for hockey too, and so that adds it up. It makes it for some busy days.
Well, you mentioned the chart, and since most people are not watching the full thing because we only release certain portions of it on camera on our website, explain the chart that you have in front of you so that people who are listening can sort of get a visual picture of your chart.
Jill, it's a glorified cheat sheet, and again, after 24 years in the NHL, the odds of you really needing it, not very much, because most of what's on that chart is committed to memory. A lot of what's there, and basically what it is a line format chart of forwards, left wing, center, and right, defense pairings, and goalies, and it's for Washington and for whomever the Caps are playing. And it lives on an 11x17 size sheet. I used to do all these by hand all the time. And a friend of mine was a computer programmer, and he saw me doing my first college football broadcast chart. And he looked at me, and the paper might have been, it looked like something from an architect's desk.
Yeah, big.
And he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm using rulers and all. He's like, "Why are you doing this all by hand?" I said, "I don't know. You tell me." He goes, "I can help you with this." I said, "Well, can you do it for football and baseball and basketball and hockey?" He goes, "Of course." And he's made a cottage industry out of it. It's
wow.
Now called Broadcaster's Edge, and he has over 100 clients, and he has all these different statistical relationships with different companies. And it's for what we do, it's tremendous. This one lives in front of me, and it's something that I will tinker with throughout the season. And especially for visiting teams, for opposition's teams, I'm always working on it a day or two days in advance of the game with the Caps. The morning of the game, and I know we're going to talk about day-to-day what's involved with my normal day, but a lot of the morning hours are spent with the chart and with all of the graphical and statistical information that we're getting from the likes of Elias Sports Bureau or from the Caps mm-hmm. Communications Department. It gets melted into the chart so that by the time 7 o'clock rolls around, I am loaded for bear.
Sure.
And you may say something on one of your hits. Al Kokin or Alan may say something. Locker may reference something, and it'll click, and I know that I have a note. And you can't spend a game as a play-by-play announcer buried in here looking at the chart. No,
yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
You don't do that. But when it's necessary, I can glance.
Yeah.
And a lot of what people don't realize is Locker and I are often, like we are right now, we're making eye contact during the broadcast. Mm-hmm. You're multitasking, but most of the time your eye is on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But to get the proper effect and affect to your voice, I want to look at JJ and have that conversation with him and make that point. And I can do it if I need be mm-hmm. to have a number graphic or a trend or some background biographical nugget. I know it's here,
mm-hmm.
and more than likely it's stuck in my brain to begin with, but it's just a nice cheat sheet. It's a nice crutch.
So he, he as he said, it was 11 by 17 sheet, and forwards and defensemen. Forwards are on one side or on one half, and each player has a box.
Mm-hmm.
Each player has its own box. Name, number.
Name, number, height, weight, yep. Age, years of professional experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll change, obviously.
Right.
The bottom, I like to have at least six lines of nuggets. It may be as many as 20 different pieces that are
sure.
Involved with each player. And honestly, six to eight of those will never change. Mm-hmm. The guy's always going to have played his junior hockey for Peterborough,
XYZ,
let's say.
Yeah, sure.
Alex Ovechkin's yep. mom is always going to be named Tatiana, and she was right. always a gold medalist. That's there.
Mm-hmm.
But the top half, maybe three or four lines, will change every season and every game. So that's where you're looking to do a lot of your work. That's where your busy work is done on the computer. And again, this gentleman, Brian Friedman, put it into a format for me that really works well. And I mean, his work is phenomenally good when you do basketball. I know Steve Buckhance uses his program, and it's a push of a button, and so many different things get updated in no time.
Like, as far as stats and that kind of thing?
Oh, gosh,
like, it
yeah.
just, it automatically loads
Jill,
up into
Jill,
your...
Jill, push the button,
yeah.
and the Milwaukee Bucks, everything flows in.
Three-point awesome.
Percentage, free throw percentage thing. And Brian is skilled enough to put it into a format that each announcer likes. Buck prefers his board one way. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing a college basketball game, I might prefer it another. Kenny Albert likes his tight ends on one side on his football board. I might have it a different way. This guy has worked out a really, really nice program to help all of us.
That's incredible.
I've seen these charts at Morning Skates, mm-hmm. and it looks, when Joe B gets going, it looks like the Matrix on paper. It's pretty intense. Joe, what everyone wants to know.
Uh-huh. Drum roll.
Any new suits for the season?
Oh, yeah. Hey, we just went shopping. yes, and yes, and yes, and I will do my best to not debut them until the games that matter. Let's just say yes.
Ooh. Okay.
I visited DePondi. Eduardo has been phenomenal to me for over 20 years when his store was Bruno Cipriani in the White Flint Mall, which is no longer. That's where I went. That's where I was told.
Mm-hmm.
That was a place that catered to and had the best. And he's been, and his wife, his family have been terrific to me for a long, long time. I think he and I share a similar eye. In fact, he's over in Italy right now. And more than likely, he's bringing home things that we're all going to love, especially me. But he knows how to wave it under my eyes, under my nose at just the right time when I'm just vulnerable enough and I take the plunge.
And how much do you want for that?
I just take the plunge. But how do I say this? I don't dive as deep into it as I used to. I used to be an addict. I am still an addict, but I am much more recovered. Mm. Let's just say that.
Okay.
It used to be a vice. It's no longer a vice.
Mm-hmm.
It's pure pleasure.
Now it's a hobby.
It's a hobby. And I need to buy another house, basically, because I don't have nearly enough closet space. That I am ashamed of.
So how many new ones do you get in the off season? Like, if you just went shopping, how many new suits did you get? And how many new ties?
Oh, geez. Okay, so you asked about this particular shopping trip was pretty good. This was three.
Okay.
So there's three new big pieces, mm-hmm. either suits or sport jacket pant combos.
Mm-hmm.
There's four shirts, and there were four ties in this buy, but there's more coming.
Okay. Excellent.
I'm not addicted. Honestly, I'm not.
No.
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 Nope. Hide your eyes.
Nope.
Oh, God, save me. I like it. I like it. It's another way to try and be creative, I guess. That and cooking.
So what is a typical game day like for you? Because I know just from the writing side, it is, especially when they're at home, it is an all-day affair. What is it like for you?
So the home game morning begins around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And by that time, we've received a good 50 pages of Elias sports data. And a good 25 pages from Pace and Sergey and everyone with the Caps communication staff. Those notes, by 7 in the morning on a game day, my game board should be in really good shape. The notes that come in from Elias, the notes that come in from each team, the Caps and their opposition, their game notes, I have to glance through, I have to pour through. And if I can pull three or four more things on each player, from them, good. It just makes me feel that much more prepared and ready. By 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, Steve Farrell, our producer, has sent our game format to all of us, which is basically a rundown of the top of the show from 7 to 7:07. That's really the only thing, guys, that's scripted. I've already written our game tease, the first 30 seconds to the telecast. That's already been done. It's already been sent to Huey. Huey's either edited it himself, if we're on the road, or he'll have Tom Newman, who's an extraordinary editor on site in D.C., spend the afternoon with it. So on that particular 30-second tease. Everything else from 7 o'clock to 7:07 comes through a lot of conversation between Huey, our producer, and Craig Lachlan, who's outstanding at itemizing where we should go from the top of the telecast. I take a look at that format when it comes to us via email at 8 in the morning, and I start to prepare my thoughts as to how I want to get on the air, how I want to introduce everybody who's with us on the telecast, whether it be Jill, Al, Alan, or all of them, Locker, obviously. And then we have three or four elements that we're going to touch upon, whether they be just visuals, whether it just be Q&A between Joe and Locker, whether it be video to packages, how I want to get in and out of those, I have a good mindset for. I script them out. I write them out a little bit, mainly for time's sake, because that's really the only time where we are under the gun constraint. You know, I need you to do this element. I need you to do it in 45 seconds. Okay, well, then I don't want to take 30 to set Locker up. I know I only have between 5 to 7. Do it right. You know, sound informative, sound alert, sound articulate, be entertaining, but get it to Craig because Craig's going to handle the meat of it with respect to the video. By 7:07, you know, we're on the air. That format lives on my desk along with the chart. The format contains a lot of other graphical information that may or may not pop into the show during that 2.5 hour window. It contains an awful lot of promotional material that's tied up to different elements of the game. Those are all living in front of me, and I want to make sure that I'm on the same page with Huey so that when our producer calls for a certain element, I'm ready for it. It's not coming to me out of the blue. Between that and another handful of 15 to 20 pages worth of sponsor reads that are kept by our stage manager, Tom Morris, you know, we're on our way as far as that's concerned. But that only gets me to 9:30 in the morning. By that time, I'm on my way to Kettler, if it's a home game, to see you guys for morning skate. I'm watching, I'm looking. Again, it's the team that I broadcast the most, so I'm very familiar with the personnel that's on the ice. But I want to talk to those guys afterwards. I want to get three or four or five actualities that I really like from players that I can discuss with Craig and Al and Alan during the broadcast. I want to hear from Barry Trotz. Those are the things that I'm most focused upon in a morning skate in D.C. Because the visiting team is not at Kettler, I really don't, and I do it on occasion. I'll go from Kettler to D.C. and then back home, but very rarely do I see the opposition. And that's, I don't like. I really don't. But I do make a point to visit as often as I can with the opposing team's head coach, whether it be for a minute, whether it be for 30 seconds, whether it be for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, just to get an opposition point of view. I think that's critical. I know we're CSN Washington. I know we're all about the Capitals, but there are two teams on the ice, and I want to have something that's firsthand from the opposition. By noontime, I'm back at home. There's lunch. There's hopefully a quick trip to the gym. By around 2 o'clock, I'm really putting the final bits and pieces to this chart, to Huey's format. I'm on the road. I want to be at the rink at 4, usually for a 7 o'clock show. I go right to our truck. That's when I sit and visit with Steve Farrell, with Huey, and go over that format with him. I know we're going to do it. I know we're going to rehearse the format as a group in an hour, but I still want that one-on-one time with the producer to make sure that this is how you meant. This is the way you want that to go. This is how you want this element to work. And hearing from him firsthand, now I know, you know what, that work at 9 o'clock was good. That was proper. Oh, no, you wanted it something different. Okay, I still have enough time at 4:30 to make some switches, to make some adjustments. By 5 o'clock, we're up in the booth. Voiceovers. So that's the voice put to the tease, which has been beautifully edited by now. And voiceovers include sponsored billboards. So that takes 5 minutes. Huey then shows the entire group, gets everybody on headset, whether that be the the gang in the truck, our camera operators, all of the announce team. We're watching Yui's rehearsal. And this is the format from 7 to 7.07. And you'll see all the elements. Locker can get his eye trained to how much he's going to have to speak in a certain window. And again, a lot of what we do is very similar in terms of time structure. But Locker prepares his notes once he then sees it in front of him at around 5.15, 5.30. About 6 o'clock, Locker and I will do a little Facebook Live, which we had a blast with this past year, and I'm sure we'll be grown out and improving more on this season. By 6.30, we're in and we're watching what's going on in the pregame show. If we're included, we're ready to do our element, our hit. But if not, then we're watching all of you guys have fun with the pregame setup. By 6.45, 6.50, we are now putting to tape what you're going to be seeing at 7 o'clock. A lot of people think that that's done live, and if that's true, then we're getting across what we want to get across. We lose the spontaneity of the crowd. The crowd is not the same at 6.45 as it is at 7, but our producer, our director, we've done it by this formula for a long, long time. We choose to tape our open, and we're really, really proud of it. It used to be a 7 minutes worth of content open. It's nowhere near as long now with commercial inventory changing as such, but still we want to nail that. We want to come on and be as professional as we can possibly be. We record that at 6:45 in case there's an error, a flub here, whether it be from an announcer, whether it be a miscued music cart, something like that, any sort of technical, we want it to be clean. So we do it at 6:45. We record it. 9 times out of 10, guys, it's one take, Jake, which is beautiful, which gives us 5 to 10 minutes to just relax, come on the air at 7, push play, that tape piece rolls, and then after that, it's up to you. Then it becomes 2.5 hours of live TV, which we love and live for. That game goes through at 9:30, 9:40. We are usually involved with taping something either for news or going live in post-game show. By about 9:45, 9:50, we're cleared. And that's the end of a really, really long day. And if we're going on the road, we pack up and go on the road. We race to the airport from Verizon Center. If we're home for a while, take a deep breath, maybe go out and get something to eat, and head home. And when the head hits the pillow, your day is done.
I'm impressed that you fit a trip to the gym in that schedule.
I want to. And I do. I get an hour there. Mainly, JJ, because I've done a lot of work the night before. Two nights before, mm-hmm. if we have a long road trip coming up, I'll start pre-planning the board and the trip, you know, on an off day in between. There's a lot of, if you're doing it correctly, I think you're looking ahead. So that game day, which sounds pretty intense from what I just itemized from top to bottom, and that's pretty much the way it goes. There is an hour there. You got to be good to yourself. You have to do something for yourself.
If you don't do most
things people,
ahead.
Most people scold me because you didn't hear. Where's lunch? Where's breakfast?
I heard lunch.
Yeah, but I really don't do a legit
I know
lunch.
I really don't eat during the game. You don't eat dinner.
And
I know
I'm
that.
Starving post-game. That's not the way to do it, but that's just been my way to do it for a long time.
A lot of you guys, though, don't eat. I find do not eat before the game. It's like it's almost like an athletic competition. You can't eat right before you play.
No, I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't. And only in recent years will I find myself even snacking a little bit during the game. Mm-hmm. Like most people will tell you, Joe, have some sort of protein bar.
Yeah.
Joe, always. Have some sort of, you know, some sort of a fruit snack during the game. Could I do it? Of course. It's just, it would be foreign to me. I don't want to, and I definitely don't want to have, no disrespect to any of the press room meals around the NHL. Some of them are incredibly appetizing. And I walk away. I don't want to have that big, heavy meal sitting on me when I need to perform. And I take it as a performance.
Yep. Interesting.
So let's get into the Capitals.
Yeah.
Shall we? A lot of moves made this offseason. What has been your take? What have been your thoughts?
JJ, I understand why Caps fans, and even why people who aren't nearly as familiar with the Caps as all of us, I understand why there's some trepidation, why they think there's going to be a step back. And I'll buy the step back. I don't buy the falling off the cliff that I've heard from some. And I just believe that the Capitals still have an NHL roster of which many teams in this league would be envious. There are numerous top-level, elite-level in some senses, still players on this team. I fully expect them to be competitive in their division, competitive in their conference. I think what's most important, I'm not going to challenge their ability level. I know they can do it. The team the past 2 years definitely should have done it all the way to a Stanley Cup. Fell short. Okay, so now what's your attitude going to be? More than anything this year, I think it's about what's your attitude going to be. If you're going to listen to the naysayers who say, well, you guys set your expectations so high, you put that bar at Stanley Cup or bust in 2 years, well, your window's closed. Are you going to fret about it? Are you going to go out on the ice and go, well, we didn't get it done? No, they're not going to do that. Professionalism and the motivation I think that they'll have now should be even greater. But if you let these doubts creep into your mind, and if you let the fact that you've lost some good people, you have. Hey, let's give Carl Alsner his due. Let's give Justin Williams his due. Marcus Johansson, similarly. Shattenkirk, Schmidt. They did lose some quality pieces, no doubt. Their team is good enough to withstand those losses and has young talents on the rise who will make some people forget about the people they're going to be they've lost, and hopefully sooner than later. But to me, it's attitude. Well, are you going to listen to everybody say, you guys, you had the 2-year window. You imposed it upon yourself. You blew it. You can't beat Pittsburgh. Come on. They can beat Pittsburgh. They have to beat Pittsburgh one of these days to go where they want to go. I want them to beat Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The year they win the Stanley Cup, I pray that Pittsburgh's on that list of fallen victims, of fallen opponents. I want that. I don't ever want the Pittsburgh people to be able to say, you won a cup, but you didn't beat
that's
us.
That's always an asterisk. Yeah.
Come on,
then
stop
them.
It.
Yeah.
You want to go through 87. You do. You do. I respect the hell out of them. They're so clutch. They make their own luck, and they win. And they've won in this era, in the Ovechkin and Crosby era. They've done it 3 times. Good for them. It's Washington's turn. I don't think Washington is going to take this massive fall from grace. I just don't, and I hope I'm right.
I totally agree, Joe. And I think, you know, you mentioned the youth and the young guys coming up. I think just having that energy in the room is going to do so much for this team because it's been a few years since we've seen an influx of young talent, and just having that attitude in the room will make a huge difference and will be a bright spot.
We began this conversation about Big Ten football, including some conversation about the Big Ten. And Jim Harbaugh at the University of Michigan, no school in the Big Ten lost the amount of talent that the Wolverines did to graduation or to the pro ranks. And Jim will get out in front of a big group of people and tell you whether or not you believe him or not, but he'll sell you on the fact that competition is the greatest. Mm-hmm. When there are jobs to be had, competition is the greatest, not only for the guys who are battling for those open positions, but for the entrenched veterans who will watch it, it'll breathe life back in.
Yeah,
we're about to see that in training camp.
I agree.
And you're exactly right. We haven't had a training camp in Washington in a long time where we couldn't just sit there and pencil it all in. Here you go, Barry. Here's your lines.
Right.
Not this time. Not this time.
I love it.
And I think that will create an enthusiasm that will help the Caps get through. I think I heard Brian McClellan use the word hangover. I think this will help them get over that hangover without the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
Who are some of those prospects that you are excited to see this fall?
I want to see Nathan Walker.
Me too.
I want to see a healthy Nathan Walker.
Yep.
Can he be Washington's Connor Sheary? Is he that type of player? I think so. Same size, stature.
They almost look alike.
You know, so can he do that? Will he do that? Aside from all the other stuff about the Australia part of it, and again, it's a great story for us to follow, but the kid's a pretty darn good hockey player, and I think he's got a chance. I really do. I think from everybody that has been commenting upon the prospects, I mean, we all know they're heaviest on defensive prospects.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of good ones. Yes. Was I disappointed to see Nate Schmidt go? Absolutely. Not only from the player on the ice, but for the gem of a person he was off of it. you can replace Nate. You really can. And you're going to do it with a bunch of different guys trying to show in their own way, trying to appeal to Todd Reirden and to Barry Trotz as to why they should be the guys that you can plug in. Christian Juice is the kind of player that I think, if given the opportunity to work with NHL talents around him, could be really, really exciting offensively. Now, what we all want to see is, how will he handle the physical confrontations with players who may be, who he may be giving 30 and 40 pounds away to? Carl Alsner always spoke to me about the importance of playing, and nowadays in the NHL for defenders, against all of this cycle activity that's done down low along the boards, it was so important for a defender to be able to hit and pin. He used the word pin, not necessarily hold, but Carl was really good at engaging, holding up, pinning that player. Can Christian Juice do that at his size? Mm. Can he do it to an NHL power forward? Can he pin Evgeny Malkin? We're going to find out. I think we are. There are no physical questions with regard to Madison Bowie's strength. He looks the part. Now, from a maturity standpoint, will he grow into the role? And a lot of that has to do with making sure he's being professional off the ice. And on it, I think, from a natural resources standpoint, Madison is a player that's going to get an awfully long look and may very well stick with the Caps coming out of camp, and hopefully that's the beginning of his NHL career from ad infinitum. He's a nice-looking talent. He really is. Both Juice and Bowie are. Taylor Chorney was every bit the pro the last couple of years. Sorry, Taylor, you're healthy, but you're not going to play. It's a chance for him to show how good he can be. Does he have Nate Schmidt's wheels? No, but he's not far off. And he's bigger than Nate.
Underrated skater.
He's a fabulous skater.
He's from Minnesota. He's got to be a good
skater.
He's
not Nate.
You don't come out of that state without
He's not Nate
a good
Schmidt,
skater.
Frontline acceleration right. fast, but he's an incredibly smooth skater. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, Pittsburgh, I think, had conceived of him taking a spot, but their depth precluded it. And then he comes to Washington, and he's been a steady Eddie and a great hand, and he's not been a malcontent at all. He's going to get a chance. You know, we can go deeper down that roster of defensemen especially. You can hear names like Lewington, who I know the coaches love for his competitive nature, for his snarl, for his ability to play physically. Lucas Johansson's not going to be far off. A player with first-round pedigree who has some very, very good skill, who, by all accounts, is getting bigger and stronger and is keeping the weight on. I hope he's able to do that. I think he's very much in the future. Someone like Connor Hobbs is going to be there before too long, too. And again, Connor's the kind of player who may just jump off the chart in training camp and, wow, really? Because everybody thinks he's earmarked for Hershey. I don't know. There are a lot of really good defensive prospects.
That's what's
the
so
forward
fun.
Ranks. The forward ranks, there are more question marks, and we can get into that now. But I think defensively, they're going to be just fine, and they're going to be able to patch some of those holes of missing Alsner, Shattenkirk, and Schmidt. That's a lot when you think about coming off of your playoff roster. That's a lot. But I don't think that they're going to miss it all that much.
What are your thoughts on Jacob Vrana? Someone with tons of potential. Seems to struggle a little bit in Hershey, keeping his mind focused after getting that taste of the NHL. But this team may need him to be a top six forward. Is he ready for that?
On my little board for 1917-18, he's in the top six.
Second line.
And he's the type of player who has those abilities. And I think as you get older, and he's not an old player at 21 years of age, but as you mature and gain wisdom, you realize what's necessary to stay here. And for some people, it happens, boom, right away. For others, they need to get their tail kicked a couple times. They need that demotion. They need to go down and for whatever reason, pout. And I didn't hear the best things with regard to Jacob and attitude while he was in the American League. Okay, Jacob, show me you don't belong. Show me you don't belong in the American League anymore. Show me this is where you're supposed to be. Prove it. And do it consistently. And we won't have any of these conversations anymore. You have the ability. He's not 6'4", no. He's not 5'6", either. He's a very good skater. He has explosive talents on the ice. He shoots the puck incredibly well with a very, very tricky sort of release that can give goalies fits. I think he's second line talent for sure. And hopefully blossoms to be even greater than that. But you've got to show me consistency now. And consistency and maturity always seem to be in the same sentence with me. But for these prospects, you need to grow up and you need to prove that this is where you belong. You belong here. Because if you don't show it, NHL coaches are going to see it right away and they're going to say, yeah, he flashes. Then he gets full of himself and he feels like he's made it and he feels like he's comfortable and he doesn't go to work the same way as he showed me that first week of the recall. And as soon as you do that with a veteran coach, bye-bye. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Grow up. Don't do it.
Joe, I could talk to you about the Capitals and about hockey all day long, but now it is time to let some others get their questions in. So let's
mailbag.
Let's jump into the mailbag. First question comes from Greg Christian. He says, count me among the fans who really appreciate you continuing the podcast during the summer.
Yay to all of you for doing that, by the way.
Thank you, Greg. And thank you, Joe. Greg has two questions. He wants to know why the players didn't go ahead and opt for the 5% salary cap increase this year. He says, intuitively, it seems that more money available for player salaries would be something they jump all over, but apparently not. Now, the caveat to this question is that none of us are economists.
No.
Probably the most confusing thing about the NHL is the salary cap and the money issues, but... And also, we didn't go out and poll every player, but the answer to this question, I think we all would agree, is escrow.
One word, escrow, and I'm not sure if most NHL fans are aware, and I know that I'm not fully aware of how this works, but at the beginning of the season, there's an escrow figure that's established, and across the board, that amount, that percentage of the player's salary is withheld until we see final accounting forms of the NHL's revenue that is shareable between ownership and their partners, the players. So a percentage of Alex Ovechkin's $10 million is withheld from him throughout the, 7 months that they get paid. NHL players get paid from the first day of the regular season to the last, so from October into April, so that's 7 months.
And we're not talking about like 4%.
No.
We're talking about 14.
Yeah. This isn't.
I mean,
percent.
Yeah. For players who are making multiple millions of dollars,
yes.
I'm sorry. For players who are making the league minimum,
right?
14% being held back is a lot. So, to answer the question, I think, if you increase by 5%, you increase that much more that the NHL perhaps holds back to escrow. So the players held their hand up and said, no. Let's try and keep that the same.
Yes. And his second question is that Cap Friendly identifies a few of our Hershey players as slide risks.
Yeah.
What is that?
I had to look it up, but I knew that it had to do with something about teenagers signing entry-level contracts. So I believe the threshold is the middle of September because it's right around when training camp starts. The question's coming from Greg.
Yes.
If I sign Greg at age 18, 19... 18 years old or 19 years old to an entry-level deal before September 15, and Greg does not play a minimum of NHL games in that season, I believe it's 10, then his contract has the potential to slide an additional year. If he plays those 10 games right away as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, then he actually is playing in the first year of his entry-level contract. You'll see Cap Friendly refer to it as ELC. But if he doesn't, his term, Greg, we signed you in 17, 18. We signed you to a 3-year entry deal, which means it runs through 20 or 19, 20. Well, Greg, if you don't play in those 10 NHL games, you're a slide candidate. Your contract window slides an additional year. I hope I'm right.
Yep.
That's the way I read it too, Joe.
That is my understanding, and the best, most recent example I can think of in terms of the caps is Tom Wilson, where there was that debate, do we send him back to junior, or do we keep him here on the fourth line and see him burn a year of that entry-level contract? They elected to keep him, and the rest is history.
The other thing that's important, too, is remember you're only allowed 50 contracts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if that contract is sliding, it may impact the way you're building your entire organizational roster.
Right. Bill Bridges is pretty upset.
Uh-oh.
Bill Bridges is taking all the Caps doubters to task with a pretty lengthy rant that he sent to the mailbag. He finishes it with, overall, while they're not the powerhouse of the last two seasons, this is still a team that can and should contend for not only the Metro, but the entire Eastern Conference. Call me crazy, but I think there are going to be a lot of people looking foolish for burying the Caps this summer. Joe, you touched on this a little
bit already.
I think
we're all with you, Bill. Mm-hmm. We're all with you. I expect them to be there in the Metro. Do I think they'll be the runaway winner of the Metro the way they've been the last 2 years? No. Would it surprise me?
Tougher.
Would it surprise me if they win the division? No. Mm-hmm. I still think they're that good. I keep coming back to what's going to be happening between the ears. Attitude. You know, will you be feeling sorry for yourself? You just come off of two President's Trophy winning fabulous regular seasons. You didn't achieve your overall organizational goal of winning it all. Are you going to slump your shoulders now and sulk? Because if so, then you bring a very competitive Metro Division race into the fact where, my gosh, I hope you make one of those top eight spots.
Yeah.
I don't think we're talking about that. I think we're talking about a team that's in that 1-2-3 slot in the Metro.
Moving on to Jonathan Woods. He says, you guys and NHL 17 are the only things getting me through the summer hockey drought. Great
it's a
work.
Long drought.
Keep it up. he has two questions. The first, what criteria keeps Trotz here after the season? Is it simply a drive to round three, or does he need a cup? There is always a problem when it comes to sports with making these declarative black and white statements of Trotz must do this in order to keep his job, because it's never that simple in sports.
Never nope. black and
never.
White.
That's Ted Leontis on line one.
Yeah.
He's the only person I think who can answer that, he and Brian McClellan. I don't think it's as simple as saying, you need to get to a third round. You need to get to a conference final. You need to get to a Stanley Cup final. I still think that if Washington performs well in the regular season, I still think that if Barry Trotz and Todd Reirden and Lane Lambert and all of the coaches that are involved with growing these younger players, they have a good effect on them. We see these youngsters taking a giant step into their career development. I think that the coaching staff and all, everybody feels like they are evaluated every season. And, yeah, is it uncomfortable for Barry to not have contract tenor past this? Of course. Who's to say that he's not re-upped in December? Who's to say we have to wait till it plays out fully? I don't know. Like I said, I started with Ted and Mac as the guys who are probably making that decision. I don't know that there's a formula specific that says, I need 50 wins, I need 100 points, and I need three I don't think it's that simple.
So much of it is intangible.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, what happens if Backstrom, Kuznetsov, and Holtby all get injured, you know, in the first month of the season? Knock on wood that doesn't happen, but
that
all of a sudden...
That was a three. Did you see that? Yeah, he did that in three.
But all of a sudden, you know, your expectations are
all sorts
are different.
Of doomsday scenarios yeah. like that. What happens if the Caps start out 1-12?
Right.
Is there a coaching change in at the end of October, November?
Yeah.
I sure hope we're not dealing with that.
Sure.
I don't think we are. I'm confident that we are not dealing with that kind of a catastrophe.
Right. His second question, specifically for Joe, where do you acquire such fine suits?
Ooh, DePandi. D-E, capital P-A-N-D-I. Ask for Eduardo, master tailor. DePandi has been where I get most of my, or all of my suits and sport coats and the big pieces. I will occasionally cheat on DePandi with a company in Philadelphia just for shirts and ties, but never for big pieces. But I occasionally stray. But no, please go to DePandi.
Eduardo's crushing your phone right now.
Yes. Yeah. Nah, he's in Italy.
What do you mean? What do you
he's
mean?
He's in Italy. He knows I love him.
What do you mean,
oh,
Joe?
Oh, and he makes beautiful things. He makes beautiful things at price points that are different along the way. If you really want to go crazy, you can go crazy. If you really want a nice piece of clothing at a good, solid price, he'll do that for you too. But you can go from A to Z, and that's from price point to really quality of fabric.
Moving on to Jay Grass or Grassy. Sorry.
G-R-A-S-S-E.
G-R-A-S-S-E.
I go with it. Yeah. Grass.
Who do you see Groovy being traded for? In fact, I would trade Holtby for Trouba. Now, my quick aside is that no one can, I've heard this a lot this offseason, no one can convince me trading Holtby to keep Grubauer is a good idea. It makes zero sense to me. Whatsoever.
Trading Holtby?
Yes. Yeah.
No,
that's
zero.
No, that's
zero
silly.
Sense.
That's
hold
silly.
On. I'll get the crystal ball, yeah. And then you can answer the question.
Well, I'll answer the question with a question for the three of us. Are you surprised that Gruby's still here? I am.
Yeah, you know why? Because remember, Joe and I talked when we were taping that special, looking back at the Caps best
playoffs,
moments.
Yeah.
And we talked how we thought George McPhee would load up on goaltenders. And so we thought that Grubauer would be one of those goaltenders.
Some of my snitches would have told me that there would have been a trade, too.
Yeah.
Not necessarily an expansion draft claim.
But I
was surprised. I think the team that was maybe a likely destination for Philip acquired a goalie in and around the expansion time, in and around draft time. That changed the scenario.
Yeah.
That changed the landscape.
Am
I happy that Phillip's here? Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Because I know how well he works in tandem with Braden and with Mitch and whomever is going to succeed Mitch. I think from a goalie standpoint, that just makes you that much deeper because the organization does feel that Phoenix Copley can be a quality NHL backup. You know you have that in Philip Grubauer. He's proved that. I don't think Philip proved to the point that he's a number one starter that you would move a Vezina Trophy winner. That comes across as a little extreme. There is no way that I'm moving Braden Holtby to give Philip Grubauer a number one rung in Washington. No way.
No.
I like the fact that Philip is here from a comfort standpoint, from a backup standpoint, from that safety net. That's terrific. He also is an asset that becomes extremely valuable. Once we get closer to camp, once we get in season,
and there's an injury.
All of a sudden there's an injury. All of a sudden somebody's not panning out, and all of a sudden the phones start to ring.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Otherwise, there's not a goalie market right now.
Yeah,
and there wasn't in the spring.
Nope.
The goalie market was surprisingly slow or non-existent for a trade for Grubauer. But I will reiterate my prediction. He does not finish the season as a Washington Capital. Okay.
Fiery hot take.
Second question is, Cavs have lots of D prospects, and I see Gruby plus Jews and maybe a pick going to the Avs for a third C. A few things there.
Third C.
The Capitals have a few holes on defense, and I think they're going to hold on to those defensive prospects like Jews to see how he handles playing in Washington. Second, as of right now, if there's one place the Capitals don't need help, it's center.
Yeah.
They're pretty set there.
Yeah.
And deep.
I know that there's so much speculation coming out of Denver with regard to, first and foremost, Matt Duchene. That kind of player at that kind of price point, sure. Attractive, yes. Can you fit him? It's very, very difficult. You'd have to move something major along the way. And guys, you know, we're going to get into this as the season progresses. This is going to be another very interesting year from a personnel standpoint with regard to being up against it cap-wise. And you made incredibly wealthy deals to Kuznetsov and Orlov, and that's going to limit you when it comes time to what are you going to do with John Carlson when it's time, okay? But that's hopefully that's for a discussion for further down the road. But With respect to Duchene, I think Duchene's better on the wing than at center. He's not a three center. And I mean, he's a top six, top three type player. I think he's a better left wing. I think McKinnon's probably a better right wing than at center. But because of need in Denver, they needed to have both of those guys down the middle. That's neither here nor there. You're not getting that player unless you are ready to make a major move. With regard to the Avalanche roster, I'm not as familiar with it as I should be as far as who might be that third center of interest. But down the middle, I think Washington is fine. I mean, I think that's your strong suit when you start with Kuznetsov or Backstrom, 1A, 1B, and then go to Eller and to Beagle, and then to all the other prospects who we haven't necessarily spoken about at the forward ranks, Travis Boyd being one of them, Chandler Stephenson being another. Those guys are also down the middle, and they can't find a spot to play. You know, when we've seen Stephenson, we haven't seen him play up in the ranks. So I haven't been very impressed with Chandler when I've seen him, but he's been asked to play a fourth line role and not get hurt. I've never seen him get the opportunity to play with second and third line guys and maybe try to be offensive, as he can be at the American League level.
Corey Ard with the last question says, longtime listener, first time caller. He loves the show. He says the podcast is the Beavis to his butthead.
Oh. Hey.
Also wanted to say hello to Joe B.
He had
the pleasure of meeting you at the morning skate in Winnipeg last year.
Winnipeg is a great place to see a game. Just a little chilly.
Slightly.
A little chilly.
He says, with the recent losses of scoring death players, do you see the Caps maybe trying to optimize their lineups by splitting up some of their firepower, something that Pittsburgh used very well the last 2 years, for sure?
I think that's a natural. But, you know, I always seem to come back to the fact that when push comes to shove, Backstrom's going to play with Ovechkin. But he might not start that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you may see Alex team up with Evgeny from the start. You may see Burakovsky play Swede to Nicholas. Where TJ goes, that's up to Coach Trotz. But you have a lot of flexibility, and you've had that for a number of seasons now. I don't think that changes. But, you know, you're looking for more bang from the buck deeper down into the lineup. And that's what Pittsburgh was getting in the crucial moments in big games throughout, whether it be regular season or different playoff series. The Penguins were getting production from people who... What's his name? I don't know who that is. But all of a sudden, because they were playing on a line with a Phil Kessel or playing on a line with a Sidney Crosby or with a Malkin, they pick him up, they elevate, and all of a sudden they produce. The Caps have that kind of talent that you can mix and match some of the youngsters. We're looking at Vrana. I'm looking right at you, Jacob Vrana. I'm looking, you know, right at someone like Brett Connolly, who showed you he can score. Brett, go and earn a second line spot. Tom Wilson, go and earn a second line spot. We all think that you have it in you. Show us. And that's where I get back to that Jim Harbaugh comment. There's competition
this
year.
There's competition this year.
If you want to have your questions read and answered on the next pod, send your questions to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts are available. And be sure to give us a good rating and review. It really does help spread the word about the show. Joe B, I'm going to embarrass you for 1 minute.
He's going to embarrass me?
First,
how's he going to embarrass me through the phone?
I don't know.
How do you guys do all this through the phone, by the way? No, seriously. How do you do it all through the phone?
We do.
I mean, so everything that I do on paper, you guys do through the phone?
Pretty much.
I don't feel like a dinosaur, but what I do when I see this. Go ahead.
First, do you know that you're my ringtone?
No, I didn't know that.
Let's bring it, baby.
Which one? That's a good start.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be simply sensational.
No.
It's a good start.
Yeah.
Second.
I did not know that, and I'm flattered. Thank you.
Many, many years ago, I was in the Capitals Junior Fan Club. And I wasn't in it that long.
Got the free picture with the autograph.
Yes. See, that's why I joined, is because a free picture with Capitals captain Dale Hunter. Oh, my goodness.
There we go.
Wow, yeah.
Give me the time frame. So we're talking.
This was after they made the switch to the Eagle logo.
Okay, so early mid-90s.
Yes.
The color change is 96, 97.
Yes. So I knew that I knew I was going to be starstruck by the players. What I was not expecting is when we got there, in walks into the locker room, oh my gosh, that's the guy on TV. That's Joe Beninati. I was stunned.
What a schlub.
Yeah.
I was stunned.
Look at that suit.
It was my first brush with greatness.
Thank you.
And I was very stunned. I was too shy to ask for your autograph.
No. Don't hesitate. Anybody, don't hesitate. It's actually really cool. It's a pleasure to meet so many great people who love the sport as we do and who love the Caps and who are favorable to what we do on the air. I always will remember the first time my late father saw me sign an autograph. Okay? And you've got a picture and a very, very strict Italian with me walking through, it was BWI.
Mm.
I picked him up. He was coming. He came in to visit. So I pick him up at BWI, and we're walking along, and someone recognized. That's where it happens the most, by the way, is airports and movie theaters and malls.
Mm.
Airports, movie theaters, and shopping malls are the most likely for someone of my mini, mini, mini celebrity to be noticed. I'm not Alex Ovechkin walking through town, trust me. But I'm in the... I'm in BWI. Somebody recognizes me, introduces themselves. We talk for a while. And here's my dad. My dad's like, what is this? And the gentleman asked me for an autograph. And I sign something, and I personalize it, and I hand it back, and off he goes. My dad looks at me, And I look at him and I go, Dad, it happens sometime. Slaps me in the back of the head. What the hell are you doing? I'm, Dad, it may happen again. And he's like, no, it won't. And wouldn't you know it, like about 5 minutes later into the walk,
he
slaps me in the back of the head again. True story.
That's awesome.
True story, Dad.
Well, from that young kid to now sitting on the podcast with you, it has been a pleasure to have you here today.
Let's do it again.
We are thrilled to have you.
And with
next,
wine.
Yes, next time let's bring alcohol, and this will be a even better podcast.
Can we do that, or do we get in trouble for that?
No, I think they do it in Bay Area. They do the happy hour, and they pour drinks.
Oh,
can't we do some wine?
This has just opened up into a new experiment.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So
don't do it when I'm on vacation, please.
Yeah. So we'll try to get the wine podcast for Gio Beninati, Jill Sorensen, JJ Regan, and my guest, Tarek El-Bashir. this has been the Capitals Face-Off Podcast. Now let's get the puck out of here.
Go get them, guys.